You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 8 October. We get FOMC minutes, 8 o'clock tonight. Or do we? Government still shut down. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, some Thobeli Boipelo, F&B Wealth and Investments, Datatech update, market loved that, Afrimat strong HEPS growth, but albeit off a very low base. We're chatting with macro research head at 91. Government bonds, they're supposed to be kind of shock absorbers to our portfolio, but if they're correlated with equities, that's not working. So now what? And then Andries Rousseau, PwC, their mine report from 2025. Illegal mining, a big issue, but lots else in that data. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Discovery execs, directors in share sales totaling 99 million rand. Together, the group CEO and Discovery Bank CEO sold shares for 30 million. Business Day, Glencore and Sibanye win approval to merge chrome assets. Green light for the deal is seen as a key step in protecting SA's vital chrome industry and boosting output. Morning markets. The US was red. S&P down 0.4%. NASDAQ off 0.6%. The East is mostly red. We got Sydney a few points down, 0.01% lower. Tokyo, I think 15 points higher, 0.03%. Hong Kong, open again, 1.2% lower. Tencent down 0.4%. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, $4,040 an ounce. Brent, $65.99. Platinum, $1,683. Palladium, $1,397. The rand is 17.24. Bitcoin's 121,400. And the top 40 opening call down 155 points, 0.15% in the red.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Simthembile Boipelo, investment research analyst, FNB Wealth and Investments. Simthembile, appreciate the early morning. The Afrimat update, and I think results are next Thursday. I'll be chatting with Andries on the Friday show. A really good number, and it looked like better than the market expected. There is, of course, base effect. It was off a very, very low base. Your thoughts on the market's response and what we're seeing from Afrimat? Some bits, Lafarge has perhaps been a bit of a challenge. Glenova also been a bit of a challenge, but moving in the right direction.
Very good morning, Simon. Yeah, so growth is definitely coming off of a low base. The prior period was quite impacted by the restatements of Lafarge, the acquisition gains, but also operational headwinds. Base metals were hit by furnace freezes at the major clients, lower iron ore export prices, rail constraints, and reliability issues at the cement plants as well, which inhibited production. So all that did do a lot to compress the base, making the current year's growth look particularly strong. But I think even when we look through these factors, the performance was still commendable. I mean, the impact of the ferrochrome smelters, the shutdown of the smelters, that did hurt both the bulk commodities and the industrial mineral segments, particularly with Nkomati mine, which that saw underground operations being mothballed due to management mentioned viability concerns in the update due to the prolonged smelter shutdowns. But I think there were certain key tailwinds in the current period which were quite supportive, in particular the significant recovery in the local iron ore volumes, but also the stable exports. I think that definitely does point to sort of robust domestic steel demand in spite of the rail constraints. Which I think is just a positive read across for domestic iron ore pricing and demand for steel makers in general. But also they noted improved operational efficiencies and regained market share in the construction material space. The support they're coming from the higher aggregates and the fly ash volumes, as well as, you know, improved sort of integration of Lafarge. Mm-hmm. So notably enhanced plant reliability has reduced sort of production disruptions there compared to the base, which I think does point to some resilience in infrastructure and building activity. So it does look like the market seems to now be pricing in sort of improved execution and better earnings visibility for the company, rather than sort of the distressed conditions that were embedded in sort of the historical discounts that we've seen.
Yeah, and definitely some indication of Andreas van Heerden and his team doing what they do well, which is acquisitions. Mm. Lafarge was a big one, but it does seem to be working. Data Tech, I was going to say, we don't have many stocks in the sort of computer IT tech space. Then I looked up the sector. There is a bunch, but I've got to be honest, I don't know half of them. Well, I mean, some of them. Kuru, I'm not sure it's there. ISA is tiny. But again, another trading update the market really, really liked. And a stock which often, I think, gets overlooked, but actually it's been having a fairly good time of it. I mean, over the last year, it's trading up almost 80% higher. I've got to say, I never saw that coming.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely extending the momentum that, you know, from a strong FY25. Mm-hmm. So much of the similar themes playing out there, extending into the interim period. They mentioned margin growth at Westcon, the IT tech and software distribution business, and significantly improved profitability at the Logicalis International, but also LATAM businesses. Better just fixed cost absorption and operational efficiencies there. So I think the full-year print will probably offer some color into the LATAM operations. The gross profits were under pressure at the full year, so perhaps some enhancements or continued pressure there will be a good explanation there. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, it does appear that there's been a broad-based improvement across the group, hence the sort of very well-received response sort of market reaction from the updates. And, you know, as much as management didn't offer specific guidance at the full year, the strong interim performance is very much supportive of their full year expectations of, quote, all divisions improving. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's definitely been quite a robust performance thus far. Better balance sheets for them. They finished the year on a net cash balance of $30 million compared to net debt of 51 in the prior year. So that really does bode well for sort of strategic flexibility and just headroom to navigate the current macro climate, and also, you know, shareholder returns in terms of dividends as well.
Yeah, 100% on that, on the dividends and results there due on the 30th. Afrimat, I misspoke, results due on the 23rd. We'll leave it there. Ntobela Bapela, Investment Research Analyst, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Shiel Martini, head of Macro Research 91. Shiel, appreciate the time. In a recent note you put out, you talk around the purpose of a government bond is that ballast in your portfolio. When things are wobbling, bonds kind of hold steady. To point out that equity bond correlation is still above sort of pre-2020 levels. In other words, bonds aren't doing that ballast work anymore. They're not doing what we need them to do in our portfolio as they used to back in the day.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I mean, look, equities return more than bonds.
Yeah.
We know that. There's 100 years of data making that point. Why do we have bonds in our portfolio? The answer is, despite the fact that they return less than equities, they do different things at times of stress. So typically, you would want the bond part of your portfolio to fall less or even rise at a point mm-hmm. in which equities are falling. And that typically happens when inflation is low. When inflation is low, typically below 4% in the G10 in the US, bonds do better. And actually, we've been living through a period where inflation has been relatively low because we haven't had many supply shocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Since COVID, all that has changed. And so the behavior of bonds in your portfolio has also changed. And so now the question people are asking is, what is the role of a bond in our portfolio? And I think that's the framing and the context for why we're asking this question.
I'm going to come to that in half a sec. It is, I mean, you mentioned inflation. Are issues such as, I mean, spending and government debt and even lower growth, in part perhaps due to tariffs, are those concerns as well and also driving into this challenge?
Yeah, so there have been longstanding fiscal concerns, but the bigger relationship is the interest on the stock of debt, the interest rate people are paying on that, relative to the growth rate of the economy. So if the rate of the real rate of interest is higher than the real rate of growth. There is a debt dynamic that is pushing your debt stock upwards. Mm-hmm. And if it's the opposite, there is a debt dynamic that's pushing your debt stock downwards. And what's happened since COVID is that that number is positive outside a recession. Mm-hmm. So in a recession, when your growth rate collapses, that number can be positive. But now we are in a period of strong growth and that number is positive, which is very, very bad. And that's why you're seeing these fiscal questions come to the fore now.
What is options for investors then? Because to your point, I mean, equities is where the return is. But as you said, you know, bonds do different things at times of stress, and that's the attraction. Is there alternatives for investors in terms of different bonds or how we structure them? Or is this just kind of the new reality we find ourselves in for now?
Well, look, I think the general view is if there is no decisive improvement in inflation or fiscal consolidation or trend growth, then bonds are going to continue to struggle. So then what should investors do and allocators do? I think the question you want is not what role to replace the risk asset part of your portfolio.
Yeah.
It's what role do we need to replace the defensive part of the portfolio? And you can't ignore bonds because they're roughly half of global financial assets. So I think there are some options. I think you need to look at whether the bond yields are high enough. So that can happen at a cyclical point in the cycle where the Fed is cutting, where inflation is falling. You know, you might actually say, we are in the right part of the cycle to own bonds, even if I don't want to own them structurally. Second, I think more esoteric fixed income exposure may work. So, for example, some emerging markets have very high rates, very high real rates. Some dollar-blocked economies may see falling inflation as they go into a recession. That might be interesting. And I think you have to think about using options strategically in more sophisticated portfolios. But basically, things have to change in your portfolio to reflect the shifts that we've had since COVID.
It's the option for EM. I mean, one of the issues is defaults, but I think we can broadly take that off the table. Is it those fact that the higher yields out of EM perhaps give you a little more comfort?
I think EM is really interesting right now, and you can see it in the price action. You've got the high starting yields that you mentioned, but you know, you've also got this dynamic where the Fed has signaled easing.
Yeah.
There is a falling dollar, which stimulates the global economy through an increase in liquidity. And, you know, so EMs do very well in that period. So the credit profiles of EM improve. Some EMs may see declining inflation enough to ignite a credit cycle. Mm-hmm. So all that means that EMs are in a very, very good place potentially if these trends continue.
We'll leave it there. That's Shaun Martini. He is head of macro research, 91. Appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Bonds, do you hold them in your portfolio? Definitely you have them in your Reg 28. Do you have some in your discretionary portfolio? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Andries Rousseau, PwC's Africa Energy Utilities and Resources Lead. Andries, appreciate the time. Your mine report 2025 just came out. A bunch in it, the one I want to touch on up top. Illegal mining, $60 billion lost to it, but that's probably the lower end of the range. And that, of course, excludes the extra costs that the miners incur, such as security. But I got to say, I'm thinking particularly gold now above 4,000. If anything, we're going to potentially see more illegal mining. This remains a challenge for the industry.
It is certainly one of the top challenges for the industry. Morning, Simon. The that $60 billion is a number quoted by the minister, and so can't say how he calculated it, but certainly at a higher gold price, it will be higher, and probably at the lower end of the range, just due to all the other extra costs involved and the assumptions made around what might be happening. It is a industry under siege a little bit from organized crime in the illegal mining sector. And in our socio-economic environment, unfortunately, a lot of people, ex-miners potentially, are being used and exploited really to do the illegal mining.
Some of the challenges, and I mean, mining is just tough from the start, but infrastructure bottlenecks, I mean, imagine this is mostly bulk commodities, coal, iron ore and the like. Are we seeing some slight improvements there? Are things at least moving in the right direction, most notably perhaps around Transnet?
Yeah, so there's definitely improvements in the infrastructure, but nowhere near the levels where we would like it to be and where it was just before COVID and even the first year of COVID. Electricity, apart from Transnet, the other big bottleneck, but big improvement from Eskom over the last year, so that has certainly helped the industry. And then Transnet bottlenecks on both the coal and the iron ore manganese lines that have an impact on the industry. I think there's lots of opportunity costs and the fact that we just cannot rail as much as what we would have loved to.
Mm-hmm.
You can truck, but you can only truck when prices are supportive of that trucking. We've certainly seen the impact on the coal industry.
You mentioned Eskom. Part of the report talks around renewable energy projects, many behind schedule, but those that are completed, I mean, it is still relatively small. This is a sector that still largely has its reliance on Eskom for stable power, and it is a larger user. I mean, mining takes a lot of power, and Eskom is still mostly that supplier of the power.
There's no doubt there. Renewable energy is a fantastic support.
Mm-hmm.
It locks in the cost base for it, and it greenifies the electricity supply to mining companies. And they've done wonderfully well, adding 1.8 gigawatts of energy to the grid. It's an impressive performance. We do say they're behind the commitments, but I think one needs to be realistic. When you press the button to develop, it doesn't happen overnight.
And, yeah.
So they've done well, but they cannot replace Eskom. We need baseload and we need power for intermittency. And at the moment, Eskom is that sole provider.
The other big area is operational discipline. Now, you know, some of the commodities, gold, most notably PGMs to a lesser degree, obviously booming, some not so much. But you talk around the focus on cost management, portfolio optimization. We're seeing M&A activity, but sort of less of them and perhaps bigger deals and very much more strategic. This really is an industry which is disciplined and remaining efficient, which is hugely important, both for the companies and the broader economy.
Definitely. The deals that we've seen in our South African context has been a bit more from a diversification point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So Harmony buying into copper in Australia,
yeah.
Exxaro buying into manganese, and then classical diversification strategies being applied by those companies. Miners need to control what they can control, and that's effectively cost and production.
Yeah.
They're largely price takers, and therefore the discipline, the focus on cost control. When prices run, there's always the risk that companies would incur additional costs, perhaps unnecessary costs.
Mm.
But there's also a reality that you can then mine ounces that would otherwise be marginal, and therefore you need to maximize what you can get in the time. The risk there is that additional cost base stays when prices return. And what we've seen this cycle certainly is that miners have been a bit more disciplined in the past, both from a capital and from an operating cost point of view.
A last question is around the perception of operating risks in the mining industry across the continent. You make the point that it's evidenced by equity valuations where African-based gold miners lag their international peers. There is still that perception, and I'm not sure. In some cases, and certainly there's been some challenges north of us and to the rest of the continent. But I mean, it's a stark reality. It is there, whether it's not always justified or not.
Yeah, so I believe it's a risk premium that's probably overestimated.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mining company's dynamics is certainly different from the general economy in a country.
Yeah.
That said, when you've got governments going rogue and you've got coups and so on, it does add risk. It doesn't happen everywhere. And even in those circumstances, we've seen mining companies come through performing very well. So I think the risk is valid. If you've got a single mine operation, you need to potentially be concerned about. If you are diversified on our continent, I suspect risks are overpriced, and there are probably opportunities for investors out there that's willing to take the risk.
We'll leave it there. That's Andreas Frosso, PwC Africa Energy Utilities and Resources Lead. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Chatting with Perkley Radin, who's yesterday. He, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. US markets, all-time highs, they sold off yesterday a little bit, but also extreme evaluations and concentration. We asked you, can US markets continue to rise from here? It was fairly equally split. About a third of you saying yes, onwards and upwards. Another third saying a collapse is coming, and the remaining saying no idea, but you are holding. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabuchli, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.